Hey, boys and girls. Welcome to the best podcast in the history of mankind. It's Monty's Rockcast. And now, here's your host, Monty Colvin.
Hey, 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 this is the Rockcast, and I am your host, Monty Colvin.
A goof!
I'm back once again to give you a 50-minute break from your work week and the crappy music that you hear on your local alternative radio stations. That's right, I'm an alternative to the alternative. And on this episode, you will not be hearing Red Hot Chili Peppers, Death Cab for Cutie, or Jeremy Spoken Yesterday.
I love that!
Instead, you'll be hearing some cool tunes that you may have never heard before, and some poignant commentary from a musician's perspective. So sit back and enjoy broadcasting the way it was supposed to be before scumbag corporate media got a hold of it.
Oh, freak boy, calm down.
All right, welcome to the Rockcast. If you've listened to this show before, you know I do it in segments, and it's usually pretty structured. But today, in the spirit of rock and roll, I'm going to throw out all the rules. This is going to be like a Ted Nugent free-for-all, where I do what I want, when I want, without fear of repercussion.
Total chaos.
I might answer a question, or read a top 10 list, or without any warning whatsoever, I might play a song.
Stop, that's crazy.
So here we go, flying by the seat of my pants, I'm working without a net. And I'm going to start out with some feedback about the last show.
Very bold of you.
Seems a lot of you were frustrated because it took me so long to get the last episode out because I had computer problems. And Jeffrey Elliott in Texas says that he's going to write the president of Macintosh and let him know just how upset he is. Jeffrey says that the Rockcast is now his favorite show, and the delay caused him unimaginable grief.
Well, I mean, can you imagine?
Rodney in Memphis also wrote to say, I felt lost without your podcast. So lost, in fact, I searched for other podcasts to fill the void. It didn't work.
Devastating.
Well, I'm sorry, guys. I can only imagine the pain you were in. However, I will promise you it didn't even compare to the frustration that I went through.
And I'm angry about it!
It's like I've said before, I love Macs, but oh my god, I'm so sick of all the Apple updates. Just about the time you get used to something and it's comfortable, they want to change it. It's like I've got my iPhone and it works just fine, but then they come out with an update and they force you to download it. And then all of a sudden, all my icons look different and they're in different places. But has anything improved? No. Kinda like iTunes. I was fine with it 9 or 10 versions ago. But no, we're gonna take this button here and move it over there and make it a drop-down menu and make sure it's all completely confusing. In fact, it's going to confuse your whole computer to the point where you have to delete and reload everything. Have a nice day.
Ah!
But it is good to have my computer back. They sent it off. It was gone for a week. And they replaced the logic board, some RAM sticks, and a couple of fans. And it only cost $330. And when I got it back, I plugged it in, turned it on, and the first thing that came up on my screen was iTunes update. Download now?
Go!
But anyway, getting back to your feedback about the last episode, Matt in Kansas City wrote to say that it's always great to hear his name mentioned on the Rockcast, even if I do pronounce it wrong. Apparently it's not Matt Krogmeyer, but Krogmeyer, or Krugmeyer. Or perhaps Krogmeyer.
You're way off.
At any rate, I'm sorry about that, Matt, but you know, people don't always pronounce my name right either. It's actually Monty Colvin, but most people say Colvin. But I don't usually mind as long as they spell it right on the check. However, over the years, there's been a few people who haven't even come close. For instance, when I was in grade school, I remember a voice coming over the loudspeaker and it said, "Would Marty Calvin please come to the principal's office?" So don't feel bad, Matt. Some of us just aren't good at pronouncing names. And to prove that, I'm going to read a top 10 list from Rodney in Memphis and see how many of these names I can goof up. And this is Rodney's top 10 female metal vocalists. And it starts out at number 10 with the singer from a band called A Sound of Thunder, Nina Asaguida.
You could not be more wrong.
At number 9 is Danny Nolden from Shadowside.
Wrong.
At number 8 from Agonist is Alisa White Gliz.
Not even close.
Number 7 is Sharon Den Adele from Within Temptation.
No.
Number 6 from Arch Enemy is Angela Gassau.
Not.
And number 5 from Otep is Otep Shamea.
No, I don't think so.
Number 4 from a band called Sister Sin is Liv Jagrell.
That is incorrect.
Number 3 is Maria Brink from In This Moment.
Wrong.
Number 2 is the extremely hot singer for Lacuna Coil, Christina Scabia.
You're sure about that?
And number 1 on Rodney's list of favorite female metal vocalists, Alexis Brown of Straight Line Stitch. Well, great list, Rodney. And yeah, I like Straight Line Stitch. And I've got to admit, the first couple times I heard them, I thought that was a dude singing. But I looked them up on YouTube, and sure enough, it's a female.
That is amazing.
In other emails, Keith Deering wrote to say that he enjoyed the Halloween episode, and he said that Rockcast 126 scared the bejesus out of me. I shiver just thinking about the horror stories you told.
It's terrifying.
Well, yeah, Keith, I understand, and I tried not to be too graphic in nature, but let's just say that sometimes there's nothing more frightening than mustard on a burger. Keith also wanted to know what I charged to do a commissioned painting, and well, it kind of depends. If you want something small like an 8x10 or 11x14, it's usually going to run somewhere between 150 and 200. The bigger ones are going to run more because there's more time involved and I use more paint on them and so forth. So if you're interested, drop me an email, or if you want to send me some pictures of what you're thinking, you can do that and we'll talk about it. I can give you an estimate and you're under no obligation. But I do commissions all the time, and right now I'm actually doing a painting for John Bowden from Halcyon Way. And he's having me do a portrait of his dog, and it is looking cool.
Of course it is!
And I also did one recently for Dominic in Australia, and he wanted to know what kind of materials I use. And the answer to that is that I use acrylic paints.
Wow!
When I was in college, they trained us in oil painting, and I used those for years. But after a while, I kind of got tired of the mess and the smell. And they took so long to dry, so I ended up going to acrylics, and I have loved it. They fit my style really well, the colors are really vibrant, and that's what I use right now.
This is fascinating!
Dominic also had a question about Galactic Cowboys, and he said, how do you think GC would have fared hitting the music scene in the modern digital download Kickstarter crowdfunding era instead of the record label dominated 90s?
Say that again.
Well, that is a mouthful and an interesting question, Dominic, and I don't really know. It's hard to say. I mean, it's good to have labels sometimes because they give you a lot of exposure and promotion, or at least they're supposed to. But these days with the internet and YouTube and Facebook and all of it, it's much easier to promote yourself. Problem is, most of the bands these days aren't really making that much money off their albums because everyone steals it. So you've got to go on tour and sell merchandise. And maybe if Galactic were just starting now, we would have fit in much better with a lot of the younger bands that are out there now. I don't know. I mean, there's groups like Avenged Sevenfold now, and maybe people wouldn't have looked at us like we were so weird. But I'll tell you one thing. Back in the 90s, I wish we could have recorded on our computers like we do now, because we would have saved hundreds of thousands of dollars. Because what we blew on studio time, we could have bought houses and put our kids through college. But those were the days you thought it was never going to end. And no, we weren't snorting coke and blowing our money that way. But I remember that there was a few days in the studio when instead of recording, we were playing wiffle ball.
What?
Yeah, while the engineer was in the control room trying to fix the tape machine, I'm trying to see if I can smack a ball of duct tape over the top of the drum kit.
That is so childish and stupid.
So the times have definitely changed, and now anybody can make an album. And I do mean anybody. When I was a kid, if you heard some band had an album, you were like, wow, they must be awesome. But now it's like, oh, you got Pro Tools, huh? Great. Can't wait to hear your album.
I'll wait.
The good news for me is that there are still a few people out there who are still interested in Galactic Cowboys.
That's almost miraculous, isn't it?
Dana in Austin, Texas said that he really enjoyed the detailed version of how GC got together, and he wondered if I could follow it up by telling how we got together with our second guitar player, Wally. Well, sure, Dana. The deal with Wally is that he started out as Dane's guitar tech. And Ben actually met Wally first when Wally was working at a music store in Tomball, Texas. And when we got the Overkill tour, Ben was like, hey, I know this guy that knows his crap about guitars and amps, you ought to get him. So Wally went on the road with us. And I didn't really know much about Wally before then, and to be honest, we didn't really hang out that much while we were on that tour.
Why not?
He seemed a little strange, maybe a little nerdy back then, but I quickly found out that he had an amazing knowledge of music and quite an insatiable appetite for tacos. So much, in fact, that he would literally eat tacos for every meal.
What's wrong with that?
So Wally was quite interesting, but when he would pick up one of Dane's guitars and sound check, I would be like, that dude can play. And so after the tour, somehow Wally and I started hanging out, and he invited me to go to concerts with him, and we actually ended up being really good friends. And he'd play me these demos he was working on, and they'd be these comedy songs, and I was like, well, that's Wally being Wally. I'm not real sure where he's going with that, but the guy is sure talented. So we kept in touch, and he was even my bass tech on a couple of shows. But eventually the Cowboys got dropped by Geffen, and we didn't know what we were going to do as a band. So I started trying to think of ways we could rejuvenate ourselves as a band, and I thought, hey, maybe if we added keyboards, you know, kind of like a Faith No More thing. So I called Wally, and he came and did some keyboard stuff and even played a show with us. But things were just falling apart at that point. Alan and Dane weren't happy, and they finally quit the band. And so I called Ben, and I said, hey, Ben, you want to stick together? And he's like, I don't know, I may work with Alan. And I was like, okay. So I called Wally, and I said, hey, Wally, you want to play together? And he's like, I don't know, I'll let you know. So while I was waiting for Wally's response, about a week later, I get this call from Brian Slagle from Metal Blade. And he's like, hey, we like you guys, we want to sign you. So at that point, Ben and Alan were both back in, but Dane not so much. So we knew we were going to have to find another guitar player. Well, you would have thought we would have had a worldwide audition process, but no. We didn't know what we were going to do, but we did know that we wanted to just make an album and see where it went from there. So I suggested Wally, and he agreed and came in and did the tracks, and it was sounding great. And one day while we were recording, I said, hey, Wally, if we go on tour, you going to go and be our guitar player? And he was like, yeah, I don't know. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, I don't know if I want to quit my job. And so I was like, all right. And about a month or two later, we get this offer to go to Europe with Anthrax. And I was like, Wally, you ready to go on tour? And he's like, yeah, I don't think so. Well, I couldn't believe it, but it didn't seem like anything was going to change his mind. And I think it was a day before we got on the plane to go to Europe that I got a call from Wally, and he was like, all right, I'm going.
Yay!
So I was thrilled. We flew to Europe and played our first show with Wally on stage. I thought the tour went really well, and from then on, Wally became a full-on member and was with us until our very last album.
That story failed to provoke even the slightest interest in me.
So that's my version of how Wally got in the band for Dana, but Dana said that he also enjoyed the song that I played by A Skylit Drive. And he says that their singer kind of reminds him of Frank Dimeno from the band Angel.
Oh!
Yeah, remember Angel?
No.
They were around in the 70s, and they were kind of theatrical in the beginning and kind of progressive. They'd open for bands like Kansas. And they eventually got a little more poppy sounding, and I know a lot of people didn't like that, but I did. And so while I'm thinking about Angel, why don't I play a little bit right now? I bet the guys in Motley Crue listened to stuff like this, but the early Angel albums reminded me a lot of like Uriah Heep and Deep Purple. Thank you. So that's Angel. They were discovered by Gene Simmons of Kiss, and they were also on Casablanca Records back in the 70s. And then in the 80s, their keyboard player, Greg Jafria, ended up forming his own band, Jafria.
Amazing info.
I'm going to do another top 10 list now, because like many of you who get behind on episodes, I get behind on your top 10s. You guys have sent me so many that I still haven't read them all, but be patient. I'll try to get to them. But one of the rules that I have is if it's really good or really interesting, or if you were in the top 10 finals last year, you get it read immediately. And such is the case with Jimmy G. And once again, Jimmy has sent me an awesome list of top 10 things that he's thinking about.
Hi-oh!
And at number 10, it's new recordings.
Oh, wow!
Jimmy thinks I should write a few new tunes and sell them as MP3s on my website or whatever. He says, start releasing acoustic versions of your tunes. We'll buy them. Strip them down like An Evening with Monty.
Could we think of something better to listen to?
Well, all right, Jimmy. That's a great idea. Maybe I will.
Don't do it.
Random thought number 9 on Jimmy's list is, how about a new character on the podcast? You can call him Jimmy from Chicago, and he can be a total dick.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Well, once again, that's a very interesting idea, Jimmy, but I don't really do characters on the show.
Yeah, you do.
I mean, I know Jimmy Jeff calls into the show once in a while, and he is a real character, I'll give you that. But if you're talking about me doing some kind of voice or something like that, not really something that I do.
This is a lie.
Random thought number 8 is country music.
Yeah!
Monty, you write great tunes. Well, thank you, Jimmy. Have you written any country tunes?
That is a very good question.
No, I don't really like country music. I don't think I own a country album, and I rarely listen to it unless it's on TV or something. On the other hand, I do like some country rock. Like I love Jason and the Scorchers. And I used to love the Outlaws with Green Grass and High Tides and stuff like that. But as far as pure country or the stuff that's going on today, I am not a fan. In fact, if you put somebody like Scotty McCreery in front of me, I'd probably want to punch him right in the neck.
Whoa!
And let me be clear, I'm pretty much a nice guy, and most people would consider me a total wuss.
That's right.
But if I was locked in a room with Scotty McCreery and he started singing, I would probably resort to violence.
That's okay!
All right, random thought number 7 is that Jimmy thinks I should plug my crunchy CD Loserville. He says, this is a masterwork, and I'm jealous that I can't write anything like this music. If no one has told you lately, you are a great writer, producer, performer, singer, guitarist, bassist, and few people do this as well as you do.
Give me a break.
Wow, Jimmy. Well, those are extremely kind words, and I really appreciate that. But if I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying I should plug my crunchy CD Loserville more. In other words, I should tell people that they can order that on my website, montycalvin.net, where they can use PayPal. And while once again, it's a great idea, Jimmy, but I'm just not into self-promotion like that. It's just not me.
Commercial's over.
At number 6, Jimmy has been thinking about Las Vegas. He says, I used to think Todd Rundgren would be a good headliner in Vegas. I figured the public would learn to hate magic acts and ventriloquism and go looking for a guy who was slightly eccentric, borderline genius, and just a great entertainer. Well, that never happened, but we do have others. So, Monty, my friend, who do you think will be in Vegas in 10 years entertaining the masses?
Answer that.
Well, as you know, Jimmy, Lindsay and I got married in Vegas this summer, and we had a blast. But we didn't even go to any of the shows because, frankly, we couldn't afford it. It was going to cost $200 or $300 just to go see Penn and Teller or Blue Man Group, so we just blew it off. But I've actually heard recently that there's bands going there to do what I think they call residencies. And they'll play there every night for like a couple of weeks. People like Guns N' Roses and Motley Crue are doing this. And so who knows, maybe in 10 years it'll be Green Day or Pearl Jam. But I'm guessing the person who will always be welcome in Vegas and will hopefully stay there is Cher.
Oh.
I kid you not, I saw an ad on TV the other day that she is coming to Kansas City to play the 18,000-seat Sprint Center. And I just said, what the hell? I was not aware that there were enough homosexuals in Kansas City that they could fill an arena to see Cher.
I beg your pardon?
I mean, who is still lining up to see an 80-year-old woman sing Half Breed?
Everybody.
I mean, I really don't know just how old she is, but I gotta think she's gonna need a lot of assistance getting in and out of those costumes. I'm just saying.
You're mean.
Okay, back to Jimmy's list. Random thought number 5. Heart is a really awesome band. The vocals are really cool, the songs are well written, and I want to see them live before they decide to stop touring.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I'd have to agree. Heart has put out some great stuff over the years. I'm not so sure I want to see them live anymore, but back in the day, oh, let me tell you.
The following story is remarkable.
I used to be a big Heart fan, and I saw them open for Ted Nugent at Arrowhead Stadium. And they were doing stuff off the first couple of albums, and Roger Fisher was on guitar, and he was so awesome. But I loved me some Ann Wilson.
Yeah.
I had her poster up on my wall, and I thought she was hot.
Oh, yeah.
But as time went on, she started putting on the pounds. And in the 80s, they started blurring her out in the videos. And to counteract that, they just started putting Nancy in these really low-cut outfits, and you just started concentrating on her boobs.
Yeah!
And you forgot all about that Ann was huge because you had Nancy, and she was hot.
Giggity, 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 giggity.
And so they just kept making albums, and the years went by, and now here it is 2013, and they're still around. And now when I hear them on the radio or see them on TV, I always think to myself, gee, what a shame. They used to be so good looking.
Yeah, just a shame.
All right, random thought number 4. Jimmy really hates Barack Hussein Obama. Jimmy says he's really screwing things up, and I'm pissed off that he's deceiving so many Americans.
Yeah, how about that?
Wow, Jimmy, well, I understand you're upset, but it's going to be a cold day in hell before I let somebody come on my show and talk badly about the President of the United States.
It's an outrage.
I know his policies and the things he's trying to do right now are eventually going to destroy this country, but you have no right to criticize him.
And there's no excuse for it.
Besides, this is a music show. I don't like to talk about politics. It's just not me.
You may want to move on to another topic.
Random thought number 3 on Jimmy's list is reading material.
What is that?
Jimmy says that he reads a lot of newsletters, and recently he read an article in Best Bass. And they asked if any of the readers had a, quote, beater bass. This would be an instrument, perhaps a hand-me-down, with replacement parts. Jimmy says he has an old P-bass copy bought back in the 80s, and he loves it. And Jimmy says, Monty, do you have any instruments you would consider a beater?
Yeah, you do.
Well, no, not really, Jimmy. I either use my stuff or I try to get rid of it. And I've sold a lot of stuff that I wish I still had. But everything I still have, I just beat the hell out of it. So I guess they're all beaters.
Shame on you.
At number 2, Jimmy says, one thing I remember from most every band I played in, there was always some kind of unplanned jamming before everyone was set up or whatever. I always saw that as musical interaction, a dialogue between all the players, totally unplanned, and most of the time it was really cool. So, hey, Monty, do you break into unplanned jam sessions with your group? And has it ever resulted in a song idea you recorded?
These are not hard questions.
Yeah, that kind of thing is fun. And as a matter of fact, we wrote a couple songs in Galactic that way. In fact, that's how Pump Up the Spacesuit came about. I was standing there one day and started playing that riff, and Alan kicked in, and the next thing you know, Ben's yelling over the top of it. And we played it for a little bit and stopped, and I said, "What was that you were saying, Ben?" And he was like, "Pump up the spacesuit." And we all looked at each other and went, "Wow, that is weird." And so we went in the studio and recorded it.
Sure, why not?
Now, another time, I remember we were in the studio, I think it was at the end of the day we were working on. And we were just warming up, and I started playing this riff, and we jammed on it for a little bit. And I thought, you know, I really like that. And I said, "Hey guys, we should work on that and make it into a song." And nobody else seemed interested. So I just kept it in my head for several years and worked on it every now and then. And it eventually came out on the before-mentioned Loserville album. In fact, it became the title track, Loserville. And the riff that I was playing that day sounds something like this. So that was some Loserville, but now it's time for Jimmy G's random thought number one. And Jimmy G says that he has been thinking about the Sonye Brothers band. And of course that would be Dane Sonye's band. And Jimmy says maybe you can offer an insider's opinion of the group's music. Well, first of all, Jimmy, I'm not really an insider when it comes to the Sonye Brothers band. I only saw them once, but when I did, I was impressed. And if you've never heard them, they're kind of like Stevie Ray Vaughan with three or four part harmony vocals. And the time I saw them, they were really tight and really good. And the day that Dane quit Galactic, he told me, "You know, I just got to go do some music that's in my heart." And I said, I totally understand, man. You love that R&B stuff. You're a blues player. Go do it. And so that's what he did, and I love me some Dane, and I love me some Jimmy G Top 10.
This was terrible.
He covered a lot of topics, he gave me a lot to talk about, and I think we can all agree it was interesting.
It was a disaster.
Good job, Jimmy. You are now in the playoffs. Will he make it back to the finals like he did last year? Well, time will tell. And now let's do some This Week in Political Correctness. The media is once again all up in arms because this girl named Julianne Hough went out in blackface.
What?
You heard me correctly. She's a white girl, but she put on makeup as to make herself look black.
That's a hate crime.
Well, first of all, let me explain who Julianne Hough is. In case you've never heard of her, she's a dancer, singer, actress, and she's kind of attractive.
Hot. Hot.
So for Halloween, she gets dressed up as this black actress on this TV show called Orange is the New Black.
What is that?
It's about a women's prison or something like that. I don't know.
I've never heard of it.
But Julianne and some of her friends get dressed up and go to this costume party, and holy crap, let the controversy begin. The next day, it's all over the media, and she ends up apologizing. She said, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to hurt anybody or offend anyone. I just love that show and the characters, and I meant no harm. Well, upon hearing this, it reminded me of a Saturday Night Live skit back in the 80s where Eddie Murphy put on white face for a skit called White Like Me.
That sounds crazy!
He played a stereotypical white guy, and I don't recall there being any outrage whatsoever.
Well, why not?
Mainly because it was funny, and even a pasty white guy like me found it hilarious. Being able to laugh at yourself is a lost art in the world today, and it's a shame.
Mm-hmm, I know that's right.
It's also a shame that there's such a huge double standard at play, but I should probably just stop talking before I get accused of being a racist.
Scumbag!
And really, I think that's the object of all this political correctness, just to make us all shut up. Because the more fearful that we are to say anything or do anything, the easier it will be to make us conform.
I have no idea what he's talking about.
But while I still have the freedom of speech, let me take this opportunity to salute the late Lou Reed.
Huh?
Yes, he recently passed away, but despite having a song that contained the words, "And the colored girls go doot 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 doot," he wound up in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Get out!
So rest in peace, Lou Reed.
He died?
I've got to respect a man who could write lyrics like that and actually get away with it. Not to mention, you were never a very good singer, and you did an absolutely atrocious album with Metallica, and you're still considered a legend.
I'm just mind-boggled.
Okay, well, does anybody out there like sports?
No!
Well, apparently Chris in Baltimore does, because he left me a message on Facebook that said, "Wow, who would have thunk it? My beloved Ravens are 3-5 and probably won't even make the playoffs, and your Chiefs are undefeated and dominating. My, how the tables have turned." Well, yeah, I know, Chris. It's hard to believe. Last year, the Kansas City Chiefs were the worst team in football. This year, they're 9-0 so far. And I know ESPN and all the so-called football experts still don't believe, and they don't even want to talk about the Chiefs. But the fact is, this year they're finding ways to win, as opposed to years past when they found ways to lose. No, they're not very flashy, and the offense isn't very good. But that defense is tough, and thus far it's been fun to be a Chiefs fan. Looks like they're a shoo-in to make the playoffs, and will they go to the Super Bowl? Well, I doubt it.
I say no, there's no way.
As you recall on the last episode, I inducted 4 new members into the Rockcast Listener Hall of Fame. Upon hearing the news, Lindsay Colvin said she was surprised. Paul Morgan said it was an honor. Phil Robinson said he was humbled. And as you might have expected, Mr. David Whiteman said absolutely nothing. Yeah, I didn't even hear from him. But whatever, I'm sure he's honored and he appreciates it.
No, I don't think so.
Now, you know I love Killswitch Engage, and you know they're one of my favorite bands. Well, a few months ago, I heard they were coming to town, and they were going to be playing with Lamb of God. Well, Lindsay and I really wanted to go, but we checked on tickets and found out it was going to be way too expensive. We better not go. We just can't afford it. Well, the day before the show took place, I got a text from Matt Krog, Matt in KC. And he said, hey, I might be able to get you on the guest list. Our friend Samantha might be able to hook you up with some tickets. Well, I said, that would be freaking awesome, Matt. Thank you so much. And lo and behold, it happened. Samantha got me, Lindsay, and Lindsay's friend April all on the guest list, and so thank you to Matt and Samantha. I couldn't wait to see Killswitch again, and we got down to the Midland Theater about 6:30 that night. And that place is beautiful. It sounds really good in there, and it's one of my favorite places to see a show. And it was packed full of metalheads, and of course, like usual, I had random guys just coming up to me, talking to me. I didn't know who they were, but they'd offer me drugs, and I would decline. So that was no surprise, but I was surprised by one of the opening bands, Testament. I didn't even know they were going to be on the bill until the day before the show, and I did not expect to enjoy them that much, but I did because they were great. See, I go back a long way with Testament because back in the 80s, I was in a couple of their videos. I was one of the guys in a gas mask in the Trial by Fire video, and after the shoot, we loaded up in my car and I drove them out to see Pantera in a club, and it was good times. And so it was kind of cool and kind of nostalgic to get to see them play again. They were as tight as ever, Alex Skolnick still shreds on guitar, and Chuck Billy is still a good frontman. Oh sure, he's gained some weight over the years, and he doesn't really have a neck anymore. He's just got a big giant head that sits on top of some shoulders. But he can still belt out the tunes, and he's got this glow stick looking thing that's attached to his microphone. And during the instrumental breaks, he'll stand there and finger it like it's a guitar. And at first it seems kind of weird, but I really couldn't criticize him. Because let's be honest, who amongst us at some point in your life has not picked up a tennis racket and acted like you were playing guitar?
I mean, we've all done that.
So Testament rocked, but after that it was time for Killswitch Engage. And I gotta say, Killswitch did not disappoint. Once again, one of the most intense, high energy, and yet at times comical shows you will ever see.
Funny?
They're basically just all the things I love in a band. They're extremely heavy and yet very melodic, but at the same time, they don't take themselves overly serious. Adam D was entertaining as ever, and I know some people like the old singer Howard Jones better. But honestly, live, Jesse Leach is great on vocals, and he might just be a little more fun to watch than Howard.
It's just wonderful stuff.
Now, Lamb of God was actually the headliner, and for the life of me, I just don't get it. They play really well, they have some cool riffs, but there's just not enough melody for me. In fact, there's pretty much not any melody whatsoever. So we only stayed for about 20 minutes of their set, and then we were out of there. But it was a great night and a great show. And speaking of great shows, I think you'd have to agree that this episode of the Rockcast was awesome.
No, it wasn't.
I'm gonna play you one last tune, and it's one of my favorite songs by Killswitch Engage. It's called End of Heartache, and I know you'll love it. But that's gonna do it for me for now. So until next time, this is Monty saying take care, don't let anyone tell you what to like, unless it's me, and
rock on.
End.